Have you ever wondered how someone you admire became successful in their professional life, but also in their personal life? What does it take to become not only an outstanding leader, but an outstanding person? Welcome to Leaders Unplugged, a show that explores professional and personal leadership through conversations with leaders, regardless of where they are in their career. I'm Nicole Boivin. For anyone who is familiar with the Toronto International Film Festival's Bell Lightbox, what you might not know is that Lori Wilcox, who spent 15 years working at TIFF, was the one to not only raise just over $100 million for the building, but also negotiate the naming rights with Bell. For the past 10 years, Lori has spent her time building a successful consulting practice and traveling around the world. Join Lori and I as we chat about her journey and her views on leadership. How would you define leadership, Lori?
When I think about, leaders in my life, mm-hmm. it comes down to being inspired to follow. It's, you know, either because they are doing something you want to be a part of, or they exude that kind of excitement, there's just no question that you want to be part of that circle. A feeling.
So there has to be fellowship.
Yeah, definitely. And in a real emotional way, I think. And otherwise it's just good business sense. If there's no passion, if there's no inspiration around it, then it makes sense rationally. But I don't know that that's true leadership.
Do you consider yourself a leader?
I think I've learned from some good people, and I would hope that I am. It's funny that we're all too embarrassed to say, I think. Yes, I think I am.
Yes.
I'm proud of the fact that I think I'm proud of the role that I've played in people's lives I think I've been able to help in some way.
So give me an example. Achieve their own dreams. Give me an example of what that looks like.
I find myself in a position... Having worked full time for a long time and having no extra time, now working as a consultant, I do find I have a little more bandwidth to be open about inviting people just to call me for advice if they want. And it's wonderful, I think, to have that opportunity to really kind of help somebody come to a decision. If it's a decision about a new job, a decision about what to do with certain aspects of their life, that somebody would trust you with those kind of details and have confidence enough in your opinion to have it matter to them. That's a big, compliment, I think.
So trust is a
big
part
of it. Oh, completely. Yeah.
Yeah. So who has inspired you?
A lot of people in my life. I think I'm lucky that way. I have... top of mind, maybe, because I had the opportunity today to give a reference for somebody who used to be a supervisor for me years ago.
It's funny how that happens.
Yes.
Huh? Life comes full circle.
Yeah. And spent 40 minutes talking about why that person was important to my own growth and why the qualities and skills that I admired that she has. And so that, I think, is top of mind. But it was somebody who I think I didn't know what I needed at the time in my career when she came into my life as a supervisor. And you don't know what you don't know. So having the opportunity to learn that from somebody who I think wasn't preachy or teachy about it, but really taught by example, was a real gift.
So
and had a big impression.
What were some of those behaviors or values that she portrayed?
Definitely a real focus on empowering people to draw out the best in them. A really good read on what people were good at and not so good at. Great ways of team building, I think, to complement people's strengths and weaknesses, and putting really, really effective teams together. And being really clear about how important each person's role was to the eventual outcome.
And how did you apply some of those learnings in your career?
I think the empowerment one is a big one. I think certainly one of the things that I think brought out the best in me was always feeling like I had been given permission to operate at a certain level. Didn't have to, you know, there wasn't this expectation that I needed to check in about everything, that my judgment was sound in terms of when I should move and when I should hold back and ask permission. And I've tried to instill that, I think, in other relationships that I have to, I think sometimes we always know, we kind of know it in the back of our minds, but sometimes we forget to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
just to tell somebody that it's okay if they want to, like, run with something.
Mm-hmm.
They may be waiting for permission. So I think that's certainly one of the things that I hope I've absorbed from that.
So you talked earlier about the fact that you're now doing consulting. You've been a consultant for how many years?
10 years now.
Oh, has it
really
been 10 years?
For something I was going to do for a year while I figured out my life,
it's
actually kind of stuck
in
a really good way. Yeah.
There's a reason for that, huh? So how does, because before that, you headed up an area at the TIFF,
mm-hmm.
Toronto International Film Festival, where you had staff, and that's the more traditional view of leadership. And now as a consultant, how does leadership manifest itself in that context?
I don't think it's a trajectory that I saw coming. And as I said, I think this is something I thought I was going to do part-time or as a stopgap to figuring out kind of what my next full-time role would be in a company. But TIFF, obviously, because it was growing as fast as it was for the 15 years I was there, it gave me an incredible opportunity to just go for it every day. Some big, really big, hairy goals, too. So certainly with the capital care, overseeing the private sector fundraising for the capital campaign. That was a $200 million campaign.
Yeah.
Never having done a capital campaign before. And really having some significant wins within that.
Yes.
You were
a rock star.
Yeah.
I remember.
And it was the hardest thing I ever did, but I think the most satisfying too.
Yeah.
And when you come to the other side of that, so for example, you know, negotiating the naming rights for that building with Bell was not just about kind of the win and the sale. It was actually about the woman I was working with on the other side of the table from Bell, who I respected so much, and we had a really good rapport, and there was a really good back. It was the way we negotiated it, too, that I would think I was quite proud of. You come to the end of something like that, and you think, wow, am I ever going to get the chance to do this something this meaningful again?
Yeah.
And the penny drops. It's like, no, but you will have the opportunity to teach this to somebody on your team. And so the next time we went into a negotiation, I had somebody on the team that I was working quite closely with that was one of my direct reports, that it was really satisfying kind of being able to teach those moments, having at least been through it once.
So it's the transfer of knowledge.
Yes. So now as a consultant, and I didn't really get this, I think, at the time, I'm doing that 10 times a day, taking the experience I have, usually having a client across the table who's facing something they've never done before, and giving them comfort and confidence. And yes, sometimes it's advice, but sometimes it's just a reminder that they know what they're doing and that they should trust their instincts and go with that. It was this kind of transition between the doing and not just the teaching, but the kind of, I think, supporting people as they're learning too.
What events in your life would you say have shaped who you are today?
That's one I might have to think about.
That's okay. Have a sip of wine and think some more.
Events in my life. Well, it's when you look back, sometimes it's the accidents that you're most thankful for. So early in my career, I thought I wanted to go into television producing. I wanted to work in newsrooms, and completely accidentally ended up working on a film crew because there wasn't the job that I wanted wasn't available to me in the newsroom. And completely fell in love with film. It was not something I thought you got to choose as a career. It was far too much fun to think that you could do that for a living. And really got bitten by the bug. So that was the most fortuitous happenstances, I think, that happened in my career. Because I could have started off on a very, very different path. And maybe I would have been as happy, but I feel blessed to have found something that I love so much. And it was kind of accidental.
Sometimes the best things are.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Has that been your experience other than this one?
Yes, yes,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, I say that to people that, you know, there's been these choice points within my career or these trajectories that have been accidental. And other people remind me that they're not truly accidental because you've set yourself up along the way to know, you have an instinct about what you're looking for. So the circumstance may be maybe open to you out of luck, but you have to go, you know, you're making a choice to go after
That's
it. Not
the
be scared of it, to give it everything you have. That obviously is a choice point that I think you do bring a certain, not skill, but you bring a certain rationale to that is completely personal.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, when luck opens that door, you just have to be really ready to step through it. The stupidest thing I was 19 when I got that production assistant job. I didn't live in Toronto. I didn't know the city at all. One of the conditions was to drive in Toronto. I was terrified of the idea of driving in Toronto. Terrified. And I'd had a couple fender benders, and so it was like, it was every reason to be terrified of driving in Toronto. But this was my dream job.
Oh.
And I couldn't let that get in the way. And I got in an accident my first week. And my boss was so lovely, and so, you know, it's fine.
What's the toughest thing you've had to do?
Well, professionally, certainly, that capital campaign at TIFF was hard. It was hard. Hard in terms of doing something that you've never done before, having the confidence every day to remind yourself that you're doing okay at it. And it is a bit all-consuming. I think whenever you're taking on something that's project-oriented, that there is a window, there's a very finite window to start and finish it. You do have to kind of put other things aside, which is hard. I think for me, it was recognizing that I didn't want that to be a long-term thing. I didn't want that to be a permanent thing, and that there had to be a balance to that on the other side of that project, that I could return to some kind of semblance of being a good daughter and a good sister and a good friend and all those things that you kind of put on hold for a little while. So I think balance is one of those hard things that a lot of women struggle to find between work and their personal lives.
So how did you maintain, or sometimes I'm hearing that it wasn't always maintained?
Balance. I think it's an everyday kind of like judgment call. I think as long as you're aware of it, that it's something that you're trying to get back to on the days that you just have maybe an overriding goal, whether that's work or personal life. Sometimes there's stuff going on with family or whatever that has to be your number one kind of focus. But it's always just, I think, keeping in mind that you can't let that consume you in perpetuity, that there has to be some coming back to some kind of center where there's more balance.
So what do you do to ground yourself when things are absolutely hairy?
Oh, I should exercise. I should do all kinds of things.
Have another sip of wine.
I don't think I'm very good at that question. No, I think certainly one of my reservations in leaving a formal work structure that had teams and support systems built in, when you work on your own, that can be kind of isolating. So I think it was important to me, and it's happened kind of over time, to build up a network of mostly women that are my go-to people. On a bad day, you still need to vent to people. On a good day, you still need to celebrate. So you need to bring people into your life, I think, to help you do that. But you have to manufacture that yourself. You have to build that. It doesn't happen accidentally, I think, when you're working independently. But it's important, really important.
So you've been consulting for the past 10 years. Where do you see yourself in the next 5 or 10 years?
I think that's now it's not a day-to-day thing for me, but it's a year-to-year. I try and do a process where each year I take a stock of whether this is still making me happy, whether I find it fulfilling and satisfying, whether the rest of my life feels in balance, and then make decisions from there. I used to be like, gotta have a 5-year plan, gotta have a 10-year plan. But I don't know that you, I don't feel like I need that so much anymore, as long as everything's working.
So that balance thing again.
Yeah.
That comes back.
Yeah.
So you're a big traveler.
Yeah. So, and that's part of the balance for me is this is a lifestyle choice too, in terms of consulting, where it's project based. I work really, really hard 9 months of the year, and the other 3 months I just take off and go. Not all at once, but in months here and months there. Yes, in the last 10 years, the choices I've made professionally have allowed me to do a lot of things personally in terms of traveling the world that I just never thought would be possible. But now I could never give up. I just can't imagine living without that kind of stimulation and curiosity and on a regular basis.
And did you know that?
No. Well, so, no, I take that back. So I had been seeing, before I made the decision to kind of leave a job that I loved, there was no question about that, I had been seeing an executive coach for a couple of years. And one of the things that she had asked me to identify what were my passions. And she said, and it can't be work, it can't be film, it can't be anything work-related. And I couldn't come up with anything, which was a real kind of red flag for me that my work had become too much of my life. I said, well, travel would be on that list, but I stopped traveling because it's... So she's like, well, explain that. Why did you stop traveling? It's like, well, it's just now... And I was still traveling, but it, as a release, not as a stimulant. So I wasn't going places because I was curious. I was going to lay on a beach and do nothing to just completely decompress, which is very different.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it made me realize that was something that I wanted back in my life, thinking about, you know, backpacking through Europe when I was in my early 20s was one of the most formative things that I ever did. So I wanted to get back to that 21-year-old backpacking person who was curious about all these things and I came home from that backpacking trip with such a energy and a curiosity about the world that I think it's fun to have now later in life. I'm not staying in hostels and I've traded a backpack for a wheelie bag, but it's the same kind of thing where you come back just re-energized and curious about all kinds of things. It's a good way to live, I think.
What advice would you have for young emergent leaders?
It's hard, you know. That the lifestyle I've just described, people say, oh, don't you wish you discovered that 20 years earlier, 30 years earlier, and hadn't kind of been so focused on work. But I don't think I'd get to live this life if I didn't actually really focus on gaining the skills that entitled me to this life. So it's hard. Like, I don't know that... I think if you're passionate about something, there's no... I don't feel guilty about working hard if it's something that you love. But it's just got... I think you've got to be in tune with your own inner clock and in a way that you know when something's broken, when it's too much, or when you need a break, or you're doing it for the wrong reasons. If you're doing it for you, that's great. But if you're doing it for somebody else, I don't know that that's ultimately going to be a satisfying way You won't be, you've given up on your own goals and what you wanted out of it. Because I think sometimes there is that obligation, and women do it too, I think, as nurturers and, you know, always taking care of other people, that you might be doing it for those reasons and have forgotten what was in it for you in the first place.
Has that happened to you?
No, I don't think so. But I've certainly watched other people go through it, and it's hard. Because they're genuinely considerate, caring people. That's where it comes from. But they can't always be last on the list.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you could change something, what would it be?
In the whole wide world?
With yourself, with your career, what you've done.
I don't know. I don't think I have anything on that list. Because You can't. So in hindsight, whether it's changing something in the past, it's the one piece of advice I often give people is focus on what you can control, not what you can't control. So worrying about other people's behavior is going to be frustrating. Worry about what you want to embrace about your own behavior that's positive and what you want to change about your own behavior. So changing the past is certainly... There's nothing you can do about that, but you can recognize what you learn from it, I think. That's a big one for me, in terms of if things didn't go the way you wanted, then what do you need to change to make sure that things go differently next time? But if that didn't go wrong in the rearview mirror, you wouldn't have that learning and be taking that forward with you. So I don't think I'd change anything.
Thank you, Lori.
Thank you.
How inspiring to hear Lori say that she would not change anything. And not because life was easy, but because the events along the way provided her with the learnings to move forward and build a successful, satisfying life. An important message for all of us to keep in mind as we continue our own personal journey. If you want to listen to more conversations like this one, look for Leaders Unplugged at iTunes, Google Play, or NicoleConsulting.com. I also want to thank our producer, Josie Guimont, and our editor, Graham Harris. Until next time, I'm Nicole Boivin.